Our fifth case for this morning is Sorrentino and Neal against Godinez. So when you're ready, Ms. Hausfeld.
May it please the court. My name is Katrina Hausfeld, and I represent plaintiffs Joseph Sorrentino and LeBron Neal. There are three main points that I would like to address this morning in support of our contention that the dismissal with prejudice should be reversed. First, the district court abused its discretion by injecting new issues into this case and then dismissing plaintiffs' claims with prejudice without giving plaintiffs the opportunity to either address those issues or to cure the alleged deficiencies it raised. Second, sovereign immunity did not bar plaintiffs' claims. And third, plaintiffs properly pled their takings clause and breach of implied contract claims. Now, as an initial matter, the district court introduced two new issues in its opinion when it decided the case on the merits under 12b-6 that plaintiff never had the opportunity to address. It first applied a due process analysis to our takings clause claim, despite neither the defendant nor the plaintiffs raising a due process argument at any point in the pleadings. As this court knows, a takings clause claim may be filed directly under the Constitution, doesn't need to be tied to due process. The court also sua sponte dismissed the breach of contract claim for failure to demonstrate that an express contract existed.
But, you know, on the takings issue, I guess I want to be clear. I mean, these people purchase things, and I guess at the most simplistic level, you know, there's a typewriter, there are a couple of fans, and according to your, their perceptions, these things have been taken away from them. They would like to have them back, I suppose, as a first choice, but maybe as a second choice, getting their money back so that they can spend that money on something else. If they're not going to be able to enjoy the fans or the typewriter, seems fine. But there have been a lot of cases. Illinois has a court of claims in which it permits people to sue the state for regulatory takings, for other kinds of takings. And I'm having trouble understanding why it wouldn't really be a complete remedy for these two men to get the money back that they spent on these items that they are not having the full enjoyment of as they had expected they would.
Certainly, Your Honor, if they were compensated and their money was refunded, that would be a remedy. But
you go to the Illinois Court of Claims for that.
Well, Your Honor, we're also asking for injunctive relief, and the Illinois Court of Claims doesn't grant injunctive relief, which is
right. But I'm not sure that you're entitled to that. You know,
the takings clause doesn't entitle people to injunctions. The takings clause says no property shall be taken without just compensation. Money is always sufficient. That's one reason why Williamson says you have to go to the state court. There's no violation of the takings clause without a denial of compensation.
Correct.
I don't think Williamson can be evaded by just saying, we want the thing physically.
Well, Your Honor, Williamson did leave open that if you're seeking injunctive relief, that it's possible that you could conceivably bring that case in federal court.
Look, your argument for why you're entitled to injunctive relief is that this is a taking in violation of the takings clause. There cannot be a taking in violation of the takings clause unless the state refuses just compensation. And we don't know that until after you have gone to the Illinois Court of Claims and asked for just compensation. The premise of the argument simply is not set up until the Williamson process is done.
Certainly, Your Honor, and while we believe that we could have properly brought our claims for injunctive relief here in federal court, even if that is the case and we should have gone to the Court of Claims at the outset, this case still shouldn't have been dismissed with prejudice.
But here's the other thing. I mean, which in some ways makes it a more attractive takings case than anything else. In order to show that they have the right, a right under state and federal law, to have the typewriter and the fans in their cells, you have to take a pretty aggressive position about limitations on the prison's ability to regulate what inmates keep in their cells. Inmates do all sorts of bad things with stuff that they have in their cells, and if Director Godinez decided, you know, that maybe he just had too many problems with typewriters in the past. I don't know why he passed this new regulation, but it wouldn't shock me if he thought, you know, it's really better to just keep these things in the library. We'll let you get rid of it any way you want to at our expense, what have you. But I'm not sure where you find a right to have a fan or a typewriter or any other item like that in a prison cell.
Well, Your Honor, we aren't arguing that once they have the items, there is a property interest, and the district court concluded there was a property interest.
And they have a property interest, which could be satisfied with money, which could be satisfied if the warden wanted to or the director, actually, it's not even the warden, wanted to reconsider. But you seem to think that they actually, these prisoners at Statesville, have the right to have these items in their cells. And I'm having a lot of trouble imagining a regime under which the warden of the maximum security prison can't decide, no, you can't have it in the cell. I mean, the state argues, among other things, that the fans, forget about the typewriter, that the fans are sitting off in the offender personal property area, wherever that is, and if the current fan breaks, then they now have a fan that they've already bought, so I guess the fan is going to do some good. That's not the typewriter. And by the way, could you clarify for me, your brief makes it look like the typewriter was seized and put in the library, and the district court's opinion makes it look like he opted to have the typewriter moved to the library. Can you clarify the record?
Certainly. I'll start with clarifying the record, and then I'll address your other points. The typewriter was the warden's bulletin that was issued said the typewriters could no longer be kept in their cells, and the inmates were given a variety of options of what to do with the typewriter. One of which was donating it to the law library, which is what Mr. Sorrentino opted to do.
So he did donate it to the library.
He
didn't
donate it to
reluctantly,
the library.
You know, they didn't just come in and take the typewriter out of his cell and put it there.
Your Honor, we would argue that he wasn't really given a choice.
He had to get the. He had to store it, didn't he?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He had stored it with their storage area.
Yes, he could have.
Or could have had it delivered to someone outside the system, outside the prison.
Correct, Your Honor.
So, I understand your issue with storage is that he's serving a life sentence, and so the typewriter isn't going to be very useful to him after he's finished with his sentence. But he could have had it sent to a family member or in some other way sent out.
Yes, he could have had it
sent out. Or he could have gone to the Illinois Court of Claims and gotten his $236 or whatever it was back.
After the item was removed from his cell. He didn't have the option on, is the typewriter was going to be removed from his cell regardless. To go back to your prior point that you raised as to, you know, whether or not the prison has the ability to limit items in offender cells, when we're not arguing that if there had been a safety issue here, that would have been a different case. If the warden's bulletin, if the defendant had said that they had raised
it. Well, there's always a safety issue.
We don't know, Your Honor. The defendant didn't raise that issue. All we know is that the warden's bulletins were issued. The bulletins themselves give no reason as to why the fans and the typewriters are to be removed from their cells. And that's where we contend that the taking took place, is because it restricted their use and enjoyment of those items. While they still have the items are sitting in their personal property boxes, the use and enjoyment of those items has been restricted. And when all economic benefit of an item is taken away from the person, this court has found that that is a taking.
It's just most of the, I mean, with the fans, it's most of the economic value since, fans do break from time to time, so they still have a backup fan. I guess there are two fans per cell, is that right?
There's one cell, one fan per inmate at this point.
One fan per inmate, but two inmates per cell?
If they're both inmates happen to be
in
that cell.
So there could be as many as two fans, maybe one fan in a cell.
Potentially, yes. And to your point.
Counsel, I have a somewhat different question, which is why is Mr. Godinez the right defendant in this suit? He's the director of the Department of Corrections. And as far as I can tell from reading the papers, what you're complaining about is something Warden Hardy did at Statesville. And not something that the director of the Department of Corrections did. So why is Mr. Godinez as a defendant?
Well, Your Honor, this case was originally brought as a class action, and if given leave to amend,
The two representative plaintiffs claim to be aggrieved by something the warden at Stateville did. It's a pretty fundamental principle that you sue the person whose actions aggrieve you rather than somebody higher up the bureaucratic chain, and that is, among other things, the holding of Ashcroft against Iqbal. Why is Godinez the right defendant?
Your Honor, if we were given leave to amend our complaint, one of the things that we would add here is the identical warden's bulletins were issued at three other prisons at the exact same time, which indicates that it was coming...
Fine, that means you should sue, if you've got the right plaintiffs, four wardens. Illinois's got a lot more than four prisons.
Your Honor, we believe that it indicates that the warden's bulletin came at the direction of Director Godinez.
Is there any evidence in this record that this is a decision made by Godinez rather than by the wardens?
No, Your Honor, and if given leave to amend, that is one of the things that we would like to address.
But there you have the problem, right? Ashcroft against Iqbal says you have to sue the person who committed the wrong. You can't sue the bureaucratic superior. And you say you have no evidence that this decision was made by anybody other than the wardens.
You're right, Your Honor, but if
it
that...
It looks like a fatal problem in this lawsuit the day it was filed.
But, Your Honor, the defendant didn't raise that issue, and neither did the district court. And so we're happy to take the opportunity to amend our pleadings and cure that deficiency and add those allegations.
So did this start out as a pro se? Are you...
Your Honor, district court case was filed by the Uptown Legal Clinic.
The Uptown Legal Clinic.
And then we have been handling the case on appeal in conjunction with the legal clinic.
Okay. So on a pro bono basis? Or?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or a contingency basis.
pro bono.
A contingency, 33% of the value of two fans.
No. Just pro bono.
And a typewriter. I think the modern value of a typewriter is less than the value of a fan.
If you would like to save any time for rebuttal,
not
perhaps.
To a prison.
If the court has no further questions, I would like to reserve my time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Welcome back, Ms. Welsh.
It's good to be back.
You've changed tables.
I almost went to the wrong table the first time. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Mary Welsh. I'm here on behalf of the Director of the Department of Corrections, Godinez. In fact, it appears to me that the court understands what our arguments are, and unless the court has questions, we would just stand on our briefs.
Hearing no questions, you are certainly entitled to stand on your brief.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your being here. So back again, Ms. Hausfeld, if you have... Certainly, you may take a minute to...
Not clear what there is to rebut.
Her brief, right?
Your Honors, while we recognize that we may have some issues with the way our claims were pled under the Takings Clause and under the Breach of Implied Contract, the fundamental issue here is that this case never should have been dismissed with prejudice. If the court believed that we should have taken our claims first in the Court of Claims, again, there's plenty of case law to indicate that that should have been a dismissal without prejudice, and we should have been given leave to bring our claims in the Court of Claims. As the case currently stands, we have no opportunity to either amend our complaint or to seek our claims anyplace else. And for those reasons, unless the court has any further questions for me, we would ask that the court reverse the district court's dismissal with prejudice and permit us the opportunity to either amend or refile our complaint.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We certainly appreciate your help to your clients and to the court, and thanks as well, of course, to the state. We'll take the case under advisement.